Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with co-host Alan Phillips. Today is November 4th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 3 of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. Thank you so much for joining us, and you just heard a composition sung and played by our co-host, a very talented musician and composer. Hi, Alan. Let me see if he's on the line first, and then we'll get right into it. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Debbie. How are you doing today?
Okay, we're doing good. We're, you know, last minute getting computers up and running, and people never know what's going on behind the scenes, so we make it look really smooth. I think that it is important that we answer people's questions on vaccinations as they come up during the shows. So we're asking the listeners to visit the Blog Talk Radio website and to post comments and questions there. We also realize that if one person has a question, it's an indication that many other people might be thinking the same thing, and they might be too shy to write in or call us. Because different people may be listening each week, we'll also be repeating some of the concepts because we can always use that repetition and get it sticking into our minds. In fact, last week we had an unanswered comment that was posted. It came on the Homeopathy World Community Facebook page, I believe, by Celeste Yarnell, and she asked, what is acceptable in California? Being an anti-vaccine person, I am asked this question all the time, and this came off of our discussion that we had last week regarding the vaccination policies in the different states. All 50 states have their own regulations. Is there something that you want to say regarding that in terms of California?
Well, sure, Debbie. From my point of view, it's a much broader question than I'm sure than the questioner intended, because really to answer the question of what is acceptable in California, I would need to know which of the dozen or so different contexts in which the question about vaccine requirements and options for exemptions or waivers she's talking about. Most people, when you talk about exemptions, the first thing they think of is schools, and that is by far the arena where this comes up the most often. But even within the context of schools, there are homeschools, public schools, private schools, military schools, colleges, college programs, where healthcare programs where the students have to do clinical work in local hospitals or other healthcare facilities. Each one of these can have different laws that apply. Also, our rights ultimately are determined by a combination of statutes, regulations, and legal precedent, and the application of precedent varies depending on the specific facts in your situation and your what jurisdiction you live in, where you live geographically. So all of these things affect the answer to that kind of a question. Having said that, in the California schools, as I understand it, there is the broadest range of exemptions. California has the medical, religious, and philosophical. It's my understanding that there's a form there that you can, in effect, turn over and check a box or sign a form. It's a fairly straightforward process. But in the school system, provided, of course, that you know about the options and know how to exercise it, and the people that you're dealing with on a local level don't have misunderstandings or misconceptions about the law and your rights and so forth. And so on sort of the more technical legal level, it's a straightforward process. And I expect most of the time on the front lines, so to speak, it's a straightforward process too. But occasionally people do report problems with local officials who, whether deliberately or inadvertently, they kind of overstep their boundaries and try to require something that really isn't required or otherwise unnecessarily complicate things. So, but I think the short answer to the question, having said all of that, is that California, again, in the school context, has medical, religious, and philosophical. So they are among the states that have the broadest exemption options at this point, among a minority of states that have all three of those options.
Right. I would have expected California to be the most liberal of them, more giving the right as many rights to the individual as possible, considering where geographically where it's located in the United States and why people flock there for liberal reasons. Let's see. So we've talked about quite a bit, and we're going to keep repeating those same types of answers that you did today, how complex this issue is and individualized it is, the fact that you're dealing with people who are schooling in so many different ways today. A lot of people are homeschooling, and how they answer that question about vaccine exemption, the fact that there are people in the public sector and military and people who have to go into a setting where there's requirements like a hospital setting. And the fact that we were learning last week quite a bit about precedents for the different levels and areas and what are the legal implications that have already been set before us to build upon. Let's see. You have mentioned before that there was something in the news and in the vaccine circles, a particular question about Section 22 of the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986, so that goes back quite a few years, that precludes liability for certain claims against vaccine manufacturers if the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable, even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied by proper directions and warning. And there's some numbers, 42 U.S.C. 300A822. The question presented is, this is, does Section 22B1 preclude all vaccine design defect claims, even if the vaccine side effects were unavoidable? This is kind of like a way for the vaccine manufacturers to squiggle out of responsibility, it sounds like. Maybe you can explain that just briefly.
Well, on a sort of common sense level, at least arguably, the whole program doesn't really make sense. The vaccine injury compensation program was enacted as a way of preventing vaccine manufacturers from going out of business because of the death and disability caused by vaccines. They were being sued. It would not have been a cost-effective business for them to go into. So there's an inherent, and to me, frankly, rather blatant contradiction in the whole underlying premise of that program from its inception. if there is something so horribly wrong with vaccines that the manufacturers should go out of business, then they should go out of business. We shouldn't be using those products. Of course, that's easy to say to a homeopathic community who is well aware of homeoprophylaxis as a much more effective and cost-effective alternative. But to mainstream folks not aware of that and who believe that vaccines are necessary, this was seen as a program that was necessary as a way of keeping vaccines available to protect us all from these dreaded diseases. And that also flies in the face of the reality that the vast majority of infectious disease declined prior to vaccines, and that includes many diseases for which there never were vaccines. They declined as well. So all of this rests on some pretty heavy myths to begin with, the idea that vaccines are the reason that we have the low disease rates in the developed world that we have, when in fact you look at the statistics and that's clearly not the case. Having said that, you know, the vaccine manufacturers got kind of the ideal business arrangement. Government mandates their product. Government assumes their liability, you know, pays for the death and disability caused by their products. I mean, you couldn't imagine a better business deal anywhere, that people have to have your product and there's nothing you have to pay if anything goes wrong. So this is
does this actually get them out of their responsibility to have to will they be sued or will they not be sued, or I'm not clear on what their liability is then?
Well, initially the idea was that if anybody had a claim that would potentially be directed at vaccine manufacturers because of a death or disability caused by their products, that you would have to go through the vaccine injury compensation program first. And if you were denied compensation there, in some instances, you might be able to go and then sue the manufacturer directly. And so this particular case that made it to the Supreme Court and that was heard in the court last month, and we'll get a final ruling on that somewhere in the weeks or months ahead. I don't think they're expecting a final ruling until early next year sometime. But had to do with a particular case which the family and their attorneys interpret the law saying they can sue the manufacturer directly. And, of course, the manufacturer and others are arguing, no, the correct interpretation of the law is that they can't sue the manufacturer. That was the end of the line, the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. You know, you gave it your best shot, you lost, tough luck. So while this is applicable to, as I understand it, and admittedly, this particular arena is not my area of specialization. My focus is on the exemptions and waivers and not the injury aspect of vaccine law. But having said that, this applies, as I understand it, to a narrow range of cases or potential cases, but nonetheless has really far-reaching implications because there'll be certain kinds of cases that either will or won't be able to proceed on to court if they lose in the vaccine injury compensation program based on the outcome of this case. So the family in this case basically argues, among other things, that the child who was severely harmed by a vaccine, that there was a safer vaccine available and the manufacturer knew about that. And because of that, they should have given the safer vaccine. And therefore, they should have liability. But it boils down to interpretation of a statute that is somewhat ambiguous in the way it's written. That is, it lends itself to more than one interpretation. And so the courts will be deciding what the intent of the legislature or legislature was when it crafted this. And at the Supreme Court level, I think perhaps more so than lower courts, and you may have others who are more experts, have more expertise in this arena that would say something different. But my impression is at the Supreme Court level, there is often more room for considerations about and arguments over policy. Although ultimately what they're supposed to do is strictly interpret the law, but if there is room for more than one interpretation to come out of it, then what's the court going to look for? They're going to look at policy. So on the one hand, the manufacturers are arguing if they lose, they will be discouraged from doing better in research and making better products, which doesn't quite make sense to me, frankly, although I'm on the other side of this issue. But from the family's point of view, if there is at least in some instances potential liability for the manufacturers ultimately, then they will have the motivation to create the safest product possible. And at this point, to the extent that they are free of liability, they are not motivated to create the absolute safest product they possibly can. So it's an interesting, because to the extent, and to the extent that the court deems that vaccines are necessary generally, they might be inclined to side with the manufacturers. Well, we can't, you know, risk them being discouraged from staying in the business, or we'll all die of all these infectious diseases because there'll be no vaccines. So it's so critical that our society become aware of the homeopathic alternative and other means of addressing the issue, because really it sort of makes this whole issue a moot point if you're really looking with awareness at the full range of possibilities here.
Alan, if the governments are promoting vaccinations as a part of policy, is that not bias? Is that not the manufacturers in bed with the government? I mean, is that not automatically giving them – it's not a totally balanced, unbiased result if there's such a strong connection there? I'm just wondering.
Yeah, to me, it's a blatant endorsement of – one industry and one of two or more modalities and industries or subsets of the larger healthcare industry. I mean, to me, there's a fundamental ethical issue there, maybe even a legal one. For the government to endorse vaccines and to mandate vaccines when there are two or more ways of dealing with these issues, and arguably more effective, safer ones. And homeopathy has certainly demonstrated that it is one of those, if not the one, that we should be focused on as individuals and as a society.
I keep saying, what would happen if we did massive experimentation with the homeopathics? You know, like in Cuba, where they have done a countrywide program with putting in some homeopathics, which are very subtle energetic forms to alleviate massive contagious epidemics, and they have had some positive outcomes. So
yeah,
I feel like...
it's just amazing. So you know, what we're on a practical level, what we're talking about here is educating our elected officials, letting them know that there are other solutions. Now, to the extent that any of them themselves are committed to or in bed with the pharmaceutical industry, you know, that's an uphill battle. But to the extent that individuals are receptive, we may be able to move this issue forward. And that takes us kind of, if I may, segue from that into a really critical, important, and some really good news on the vaccine front, that the National Vaccine Information Center, one of the older and larger and more established grassroots organizations, which has been around since the mid-80s. In fact, they were instrumental in helping to get the injury compensation program passed, which was a good thing to the extent that it helped to bring awareness to vaccine injury and to help a lot of people get into that system and get some compensation for the harm caused. They have just launched something that they're calling the NVIC Advocacy Portal. And what they have done, in a nutshell, is to create the internet infrastructure that will make it much easier for individuals around the United States to band together and work collaboratively and effectively to enact legislation, expanding our rights where vaccines are concerned, to oppose legislation that would seek to diminish our rights. And it's a wonderful wonderful, wonderful thing. There's a woman by the name of Dawn Richardson, that's Dawn, D-A-W-N, a woman, who has been associated with the National Vaccine Information.
Say that again, D-A, how do you spell that?
D-A-W-N.
Okay, D-A-W-N, Richardson in Texas.
She's in Texas, and she's been successful in getting legislation passed in Texas concerning vaccine registries. They actually have an opt-in registry in Texas, thanks to Don spearheading that effort. So she has some expertise and experience in how this legislative arena works. And I just want to underscore that as critical as it is as a starting point to be informed about vaccines, and that's an ongoing process because new information is coming up all the time, that knowledge and awareness of problems with vaccines in and of itself doesn't do anything. We have to go the next step with that, to take that knowledge and apply it in a constructive way. And ultimately what that means is becoming involved in legislative initiatives. So the advocacy portal, and I'm proud and frankly honored to be able to share with you today, Debbie, that I am the North Carolina State Director with the NVIC Advocacy Portal. And somewhere in the next few days, I'll be putting up information there about legislation currently up in here in North Carolina. And there's, in fact, I was looking at just this morning, there are actually several bills that involve immunizations in one way or another that are up. And we may
in North Carolina?
Here in North Carolina, and probably around the country. I imagine in most states around the country. It's a multifaceted issue legislatively. There are many, many different issues that we could address with regard to expanding rights, but there are also other issues we need to look at in terms of opposing legislation and proposed legislation, because there are people with pro-vaccine agendas who are seeking to expand requirements, diminish the right to refuse, to do whatever they can do, basically to expand the vaccine market. Just as one example, and I'm sure it's not just here in North Carolina, but there's a proposed legislation that would have the state start investigating and exploring using schools to as distribution centers for flu vaccines. They want to start vaccinating everybody in the schools. You know, I could go at length talking about how ineffective flu vaccines are generally, and about the documented harm that they cause. But, you know, just the very idea of an educational facility becoming a medical distribution center, you know, what's behind that is not, by any reasonable scientific measure, protecting people's health. It's about expanding vaccine sales. And not surprising, because we have just in the last few months, opened up a brand new pandemic flu manufacturing center here in North Carolina, $1 billion center that had close to $500 million of federal grant money backing it, supporting it.
How much? How much did you say?
It's a $1 billion facility, and the figure is between $450 and $500 million that the federal government gave to Novartis to build this facility here, and it's in Holly Springs, North Carolina. We have four of the five largest vaccine manufacturers have set up shop here in North Carolina, according to the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, and they refer to North Carolina as Vaccine Central. So we may be very well be the center, the primary center. There are others. New Jersey is one, I think. But we may be the primary vaccine center right here in North Carolina. So we're not just some little backwoods country Bible Belt state on this issue. We are a critical focal point. And so it's important everywhere in the U.S., but perhaps nowhere more importantly than here in North Carolina, given the pharmaceutical presence.
So I have a question about that.
Sure.
Because I noticed every single place I go, and even telephone calls, automated telephone calls or otherwise, when I go to the drugstore to pick up some cat food or a hairbrush, and not only at the doorway do they bombard you with a sign postage, what do you call it? Those boards. There's a big sign that says, get your flu vaccine today and now, and it costs such and such. And then when you go inside the store, there's the same thing. And then even at the checkout, they ask you. And when I'm on the telephone and I have a general phone call from, well, there are a lot of people who try to sell you stuff. And
right.
And there's one from the North Carolina Employees Union. And they'll get on and say, go get your vaccination for the flu. And no matter, on the radio, every other minute there's another advertisement. My question is this just North Carolina, or is this the entire United States getting absolutely the advertisement on every kind of media is massive? And I just can't understand.
Well,
I mean,
it's a for-profit.
To change people's minds.
It's a for-profit business, and so they're trying to sell their products. The problem, of course, as you brought up a few minutes ago, is that they're doing this both directly and through government. And so there's just no appropriate way for government to, you know, endorse any one industry or one healthcare approach over others. But the system we have in place right now is where that occurs. There's well-documented conflicts of interest and outright corruption, according to the World Health Organization, at all levels of the what they refer to in their statement about this as the medicines chain, all the way from research to distribution. You know, so they say there's corruption. The World Health Organization says there's corruption throughout the entire industry at all different levels. There's huge money to be made here, and so they're going to do whatever they can. And up to a point, who can blame them for doing whatever they want to try to earn a buck? I mean, this is America and capitalism, and that's supposed to be what you do. You know, so I mean, there's fundamental problems with the whole system, at least in the regard that it encourages, or at least has resulted in, people seeking to earn profit to the detriment of the health and lives of others. So there's clearly serious ethical and moral issues with the current structure of our society, at least as it pertains to healthcare, although I suspect in one degree or another it's throughout the system, human beings being what we are. But it is a problem, and, you know, we can sit by and watch this happen and either be oblivious to it or appalled by it or whatever, or we can take some steps. So I encourage people to go to the NVIC advocacy portal. You can do a quick quick web search or go to the NVIC.org website, and they'll have links to the advocacy portal right there on their homepage, I believe. And sign up for that. Now, right at this moment, Debbie, there's nothing on the North Carolina page. They're still doing some of the preliminary setup, but we will have legislative initiatives and other kinds of vaccine-related announcements there, and they will be up on other states. But the main thing right now is for anybody concerned on this issue to sign up there. It doesn't obligate you to do anything, but what it does give you is a very convenient way to find out what's going on legislatively in your state and to immediately connect with others so that as a group in each state we can communicate effectively to our representatives to support or deny, you know, our wishes and agendas legislatively. And that's really, again, where the rubber meets the road with all of this in terms of our rights.
Okay, well, I just got on the Internet and I put in NVIC.org. It took me directly to the National Vaccine Information Center, where they have a video, which is a wonderful video, I'm sure, that I've seen before. And then it has the listing, welcome, Vaccine Laws and State Requirements, Advocacy Portal, Diseases and Vaccines, Gardasil, The Damage Continues, H1N1 Swine Flu and Seasonal Flu Facts, Ask 8 Questions Before You Vaccinate, 49 Doses of 14 Vaccines Before Age 6, that's what we're doing to our young people. And Vaccine Ingredients Calculator. Those are the major links there. And so you're saying the brand new resource is the advocacy portal?
That's correct.
Okay.
And this is, again, this is part two of the overall vaccine issue. Part one is awareness. Part two is action to to affect our rights, and those stem primarily for most of us out of state law. So we need
right.
to. The federal government does not have the authority to reach into states to mandate vaccines or offer exemptions for state residents, and that's generally true of healthcare issues. That's one of the reasons we have this huge debate with the recent healthcare legislation. Did Congress, federal Congress, exceed its bounds by mandating healthcare for state residents? And you know, that's a real interesting question, and there are arguments on both sides of that. So it's going to be interesting to see how the whole healthcare debate plays out, even more so with the Republicans getting control of the House. These are going to be some real interesting times
mm-hmm.
in the weeks and months ahead. But again, the bottom line is that we need to become aware of what the limitations are on our rights to choose. For example, most states have emergency health laws that can mandate vaccines in a declared emergency without any exemptions. So if we don't, on a state-by-state level, go in and take steps to get those laws changed, the next time there's a pandemic, and that could be any time, and whether it's a real pandemic or not, we know from the recent swine flu pandemic, we have know now from mainstream sources that there really wasn't a pandemic. They changed the definition so a non-pandemic
right.
could be called a pandemic, and in doing that, triggered contract clauses that resulted in the sale of $18 billion of vaccines. So we can all, and most of them were never even distributed. I'm talking about internationally here.
Right.
Most of the vaccines were never
administered. Right. What they ended up doing was trashing them. They had to or save them and resell them or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, all the above. And so,
right.
you know, it's a huge waste of money. Not that
right.
countries can afford to waste money ever, but least of all in recent and current economic times. And the vaccine manufacturers are laughing all the way to the bank. You know, most every other country bought the vaccines, whether they got distributed or not, they're paid for, you know. So we
mm-hmm.
we took a hit. Here in the U.S., we just a few weeks ago threw away $260 million of expired vaccines, swine flu vaccines. Thank God we had them if we needed them, you know. I mean, I'm being facetious, if not sarcastic, on that last comment, because
mm-hmm.
I just don't think there was anything that rose to the level of an emergency or epidemic or pandemic by any meaningful definition of those words.
Yes, not only there were less influenza, people affected by influenza than in a typical flu year. But I wanted to mention also the partners who are located on the National Vaccine Information Center. Mercola.com, United Way, and CFC, all three of those are listed as partners.
Yeah, now Dawn Richardson and her husband spent months putting together the software for this advocacy portal, and they just deserve the strongest praise for that. And they had a system, actually, I believe, set up of their own, but they partnered with Dr. Joe Mercola, who's a osteopathic physician. He's a medical doctor, but has been long been outspoken with concerns about immunizations, and he has the hardware to enable this advocacy portal to be the most efficient that it can be. Put a long story short.
Mm-hmm.
So he's providing the servers and so forth. Dawn and her husband have created and are providing the software on behalf of the National Vaccine Information Center. And I don't know about the third party and how that factors into this, but it's really an unprecedented collaborative effort. And it's just getting started. I'm sure they're going to be making changes to it over time. But I tell you, from what I have seen with the initial introduction to the site, I just think it's amazing. Now, my own project, the Pandemic Response Project, I will continue that project independently, but I will absolutely be utilizing the advocacy portal to
mm-hmm.
promote awareness of that and to get support through the National Vaccine Information Center's advocacy portal for our legislative initiatives here. I don't think either myself nor the NVIC are concerned nearly so much with who does what and gets credit for what as we are in working together to find out the quickest and best way to achieve the goals. And we have very, very same and similar goals and understandings about the need for legislative initiatives. The NVIC isn't taking a position on who should be doing what in any given state at any given time, so much as they are simply providing the infrastructure for those who wish to take the initiative now to have a way of doing that in the most effective way possible. Don learned, as many people do when they get into the legislative arena for the first time, what did and didn't work along the way, what it took to get things done, and there's no one formula or answer for every single issue, and certainly not in every state. You know, that'll ultimately be a unique path for each legislative initiative in each state. But seeing what kinds of issues could be addressed and parts of this process made easier and more effective, and coming from valuable success and experience, they put together this package. So I do strongly encourage anyone concerned in the issue living in the U.S. to sign up on the advocacy portal. I'll be making
We are really indebted to you, to Dawn, to all those persons who have been involved with this issue and finding ways to get the word out and make it easier for the general public to participate and learn about what's going on in their particular state, so that people like Celeste, when she asks what's happening in California, she'll be able to go over to that, click over to that site and learn on her own, and then from there get a little bit more knowledge to be able to ask even more in-depth questions.
Now, I'll just mention briefly, it's my understanding that probably over the course of the next, well, I'll say few weeks, that Don expects to have roughly half of the states in the U.S. will have state directors with this advocacy portal program. That's an enormous first step in a relatively short period of time, but there will be a need for directors in other states. So, folks who sign on to this and see that there's not a state director for their state, if they have interest in that, I encourage them to contact Don. I'm sure there's contact information on the site, or if not, folks are welcome to contact me. But, we'll be looking, they'll be looking to get, directors.
Looking for leaders. Right.
Yeah, ultimately for all 50 states.
Well, we can keep announcing that and use HWC, the vaccinations in your health and your rights in the U.S. as an announcement place that people can learn about it and get that word out and tell other people. I would like to continue on for the last few minutes of this show about what we spoke about last week, that we realized actually the complexity of the legal system, and we discussed substantive and non-substantive law. And from that show, there came some questions that we would like to address. And the questions were posted on the Blog Talk Radio website. So please, you can go over there and post your questions or comments, and we will look at them. The person wrote, "Every person is unique. My religion is no one's business, according to the Bill of Rights. Why should I be made to have vaccinations, a violation of my body, if I don't want to?" And he posted three more questions. We'll obviously not get to all of them, but we can touch upon them and continue next session. What if I just don't want to get vaccinated? Do I have any rights? And so why is it so important to, I mean, throwing these at you. So why is it so important to fight mandatory vaccinations? And does it matter if I belong to a church? What are my rights?
Well, it would take a book to answer those questions thoroughly, and which is why I wrote the e-book, The Authoritative Guide to Vaccine Legal Exemptions, and I just want to refer folks to that again, and it's available on the Homeopathy World Community website, and Debbie, maybe you can tell people exactly where, but all the things, most if not all things we talk about in the arena of vaccine rights, and I'll certainly get to these questions in a moment, are addressed in some detail in the e-book, and so it's a great information book and reference and way to follow along with this series of shows as well. But anyway, the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is a document containing the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. And originally the Constitution, the federal Constitution, because every state has a state constitution as well, originally the federal Constitution only applied to the federal government. And it wasn't until we had some Supreme Court cases a few decades ago that said what are referred to as the fundamental rights within the Bill of Rights also apply to state and local government. And so within the First Amendment, which is part of the Bill of Rights, there is a phrase that's called the Free Exercise Clause, and it refers to our right to the free exercise of religion. The Constitution, of course, has nothing one way or the other about vaccines specifically, and this is something that's sort of inherent to our legal system and current society, that in one sense the law tries to do something that is impossible, and that is it tries to put together rules that would theoretically apply to an hypothetically infinite range of future circumstances. Of course, that's not a realistic thing for law to do. And so inevitably, when you have constitutional provisions or statutes and regulations and the like, situations will come up where there is a reasonable question about if and how the constitutional provision, statute, or law, or what have you, applies to a situation. So how does the Bill of Rights, the Free Exercise Clause, apply to vaccinations? Well, in terms of the current status of law, we know that what the answer to that is only to the extent that there is legal precedent that addresses specific conflicts that have come up and gone to court and gone through the legal process, appeals, and so forth until they become legal precedent in the form of what's called a published opinion. So first of all, and sort of the most obvious place to me to start with about our free exercise of religion is that is necessarily not an unbounded right. We do not have the right to sacrifice goats and virgins every Saturday night just because it's our religion to do that. Now, that's sort of the extreme example, more obvious one, but there are other examples that aren't quite as obvious. And there are going to be people who have different opinions about where that line should be drawn with regard to different issues. So the current status of law with regard to the application of the freedom of religion as it applies to the right to refuse vaccines for religious reasons, in general, is fine up to the point where there's some kind of emergency, whether it's a local emergency or an epidemic or pandemic or whatever, at which point all bets are off and exemptions go out the window and the state has the obligation and under current law within the mainstream view of vaccines to impose quarantines and or immunizations on individuals even if they do have religious objections. So, and maybe I should back up one more step.
Alan, you're not going to have time to back up. We have about 1 minute left.
Okay.
So we're going to open this whole thing up. The first thing we're going to talk about next session will be this, the Bill of Rights, our rights, and if we can sacrifice virgins in our states or whatever else. And you'll teach us about that. I'm looking forward to it. Did you have one more comment to make?
Well, sure. The starting place is that laws mandate vaccines in certain situations. And then the question then is, are there any exceptions? And if there are, how do you qualify for them? So why can't I just not get vaccinated if I don't want to? Well, if there's a law that says you have to be, then you do, unless you qualify for some available exemption, waiver, whatever you call it. So that's really what we're looking at as kind of a starting point.
Okay, we're going to take it from there on the next show. There's a lot to learn, and please get your ebook because then you will be able to follow along as he quotes us from chapter and verse in the ebook. Thanks so much, Alan.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Bruck on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Think of us together, like people everywhere. We dream about a world at work, where people really care. Our paths and our lives before us, our journeys can begin. So they do as we bring out the wisdom from But now we know with drinking new and more ability. Find our true expression. Allow our souls to shine. Bringing forth a brave new love and healing for mankind. Share your light. Let your love be unfurled. One by one, we are changing the world. To make a lasting difference, we can't do it happily. It takes an act of loving will to cause a change to be. So light your inner candle, and ever guard its flame. As its radiance grows brighter to the world, it will proclaim. Share your light, let your truth be unfurled. One by one, we are freeing the world. Share your light, let your truth be unfurled. One.